What's up, Internet, and welcome to episode 78 of Radio Radar. I'm Hollander Cooper, and here with me is...
Henry Gilbert.
Lorenzo Valoria.
Ryan Telgenick.
And we're going to jump right into it this week, because we have a super busy day, but that means... That doesn't mean, rather, that we're going to leave you without podcasts. Stop laughing, Happy Henry!
I know we're in a room.
And...
And we really are jumping into it.
We're jumping right into it.
Yeah. There's no foreplay this time.
Yeah. No foreplay. And you know what? Even though there's no foreplay, we're going to have a little bit of lubrication.
Oh.
In that...
You just made it really
In that, Henry is going to introduce the top seven because he wrote it.
Yeah, this was... Thanks. This was
Henry, you're the lube of this podcast.
This was the one I really wanted to write. I don't know why we hadn't done it before. And when I pitched it, Andy on the UK side too was just like, it was the only time I've ever seen him reply to a feature idea with yes, 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 like three yeses in a row. And it is the unspoken rules of gaming.
Okay.
Number seven is respect when a character is off limits in multiplayer.
Yeah, so this list was definitely drawn from my personal experiences a bit. And this one takes me back to just late high school and early college, like couch multiplayer in my family living room. We have the GameCube and the N64 hooked up to the TV or the Dreamcast. We're like, all right, time to play. And then somebody would say, like, you can't be Odd Job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is cheating.
That was, like, I think that was a universal thing. I was just going to say that nobody could be Odd Job ever. You'd just get kicked in the ass.
Yeah.
There were no game patches back then. So the only way, like, that was the equivalent of, like, GoldenEye update 2.7. No Odd Job.
Yeah,
dudes.
Don't use that.
Yeah, it's basically the patch notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, but there are, like, there are ones everybody can agree upon that, but there are also ones of just, like, I always said Pikachu is super cheap. Don't play as him in the original Smash Brothers. Mm. Like, I'm gonna. Or also Star Fox was kind of cheap because he had like auto. He had the only reflect move I think in the original version.
I think you're right. Mario got his cape in.
Yeah, that was melee.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Well, maybe Samus had reflect as well. I can't remember. But
Samus doesn't have a reflect.
No, I don't think so.
And there was the same.
You're wrong.
Sorry.
Wrong, Henry.
But there, it was a similar deal with Ready to Rumble in my house, which was the Dreamcast boxing game, which was okay for its
stereotypes
time.
The game.
It makes punch out ethnic stereotypes seem very even handed.
Well, as Henry said before in the office, as long as the stereotype is positive, it's not offensive.
Watch Game Bunker, guys. I said it on there. It was really funny this week.
That was a great episode.
Yeah, but the guy who was off limits there was this, I forget his character name, but he was the Australian guy who his special was just punch, stand in place and punch 8 times in a row that would take all your health. Like, it was just
that's fun.
A cheap-ass move. And lastly, in the Aki N64 games, there was a character, Aki Man, who the Aki wrestling game.
Okay.
And he was
I honestly
cheap.
Thought you were, like, you know how sometimes when you make fun of British people, you do a weird accent? I thought you were saying hockey and, like, Canadian accent.
Hockey.
The dumb hockey games, right?
It's hockey game.
Pretty sure that's not Canadian.
Yeah.
I know.
That turned into an Australian
well, I was
Canadian.
Was a British person saying hockey.
Okay.
But did you also have friends who would do a different thing where they would say, like, I'm this guy. Nobody plays him. That's my character. Like...
Not too often, I don't think. Gosh. No, but I do the most obvious, you know, as we already mentioned, Odd Job was always, I think, a universal thing for almost everybody.
It's amazing.
People hold that game up with such high, like they remember it so fondly and try to tell us, like, it should be on your list of the best games. And it's like, it was so broken that we had to house rule full-on characters from multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. It was fun, though.
Yeah. It was fun. All right. Number six is you must talk to every NPC at least twice.
This was my rule. I don't know. You guys have this rule, right?
Yeah, no. Because I played JRPGs, you know, as soon as I got my PlayStation, that's basically all I played until PS2 came out.
And so you got the job here, pretty much.
This came up in a game that I'm currently playing with Ryan right now. Mm. And, I talked to a guy, like, five times before he actually decided to give me something. Like, literally, you have to talk to him that many times, and it's insane.
It's like a roguelike dialogue.
Yeah.
In this specific case, it's not at least, it's not just twice. It's at least eight times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
And sometimes it's to unlock something, but I also just love hearing, I want to hear all the dialogue. If they wrote it, like, that's... I did that in Broken Age recently. When I played Broken Age, I was like, well, I did talk to this guy once, but I bet if I present him this item again, they'll say something funny.
This time, I know the solution to this puzzle isn't showing the knife to this woman, but what if I showed it to her again?
My motto is talk to them until they repeat the last sentence at least once or twice.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
And I just saw that in Danganronpa, which I just started playing. I played the prologue of that, and in the beginning, a character will tell you their life story and then say, all right, so see you later.
What was the name of that game?
That's Trigger Happy Havoc. That's
okay. Really Danganronpa.
I was going to ask if you had a stroke on air just now.
But now it's Danganronpa. Danganronpa.
Yeah.
That's the commercial for the game that we just got paid to do.
It's fun. If you like Persona but wish it didn't have battles or dungeons, it's just the character interaction. It's a good game so far.
Number five is the most unpopular player or unpopular guest uses the worst controller.
Oh, man. This was a big problem for me because my cousin and I.
Because you were the unpopular guest.
Yeah, I guess it was. And I was the only guest. How unpopular must I have been? I'd mentioned this before, but I used to go over to my cousin's house every single weekend and we would just play games all weekend. And. His family was a big supporter of third-party peripherals. They had all sorts of really shitty controllers for basically every system they owned. And, you know, it's always one of those things. You always want to fight to not have that because you are automatically at a disadvantage, especially if you're playing some kind of multiplayer game. And I just remember a lot of the times being stuck with some of the crappier controllers.
And a lot of the times they weren't technically any worse. They were just, like, to avoid a lawsuit, the handles would be like double the width and it would just be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tried to never have third party controllers, but it would happen. The one time I remember it definitely happening was with the N64 mm-hmm. where one of the N64, like those analog nubs break or they become, they don't like snap in half, but after you play enough games of Mario Party, they don't work anymore.
Right.
Mm. So you got to replace them.
And it's easy. There's a certain amount of like, when you're that young and your parents are the ones that buy games for you, you can sell them on, I need this game because it's a new game. But when you're like, you know how you already bought me four controllers? Kind of need another one. It's a much harder sell.
And then when you can get it for $15 cheaper at Walmart and who cares? It's a controller. Like, your parents think, who cares? But the first one I bought for myself, like, I was 17. We went to Walmart. Like, it was just, we had a hankering to play more Smash Brothers. And we said, all right, let's play it. The N60, this one doesn't work. Like, then we're going to Walmart. It's 1 a.m. We're going. It's open.
Yeah, this can.
But they were all sold out. They didn't have regular N64 controllers in the year 2000 at this Walmart. So we had to buy the third-party one. And it was the one we played with for another, like, year.
So, you know, I'm actually really curious if we're going to see much in the way of third-party controllers for this generation of consoles.
I don't know.
Because they seem like the controllers are just kind of a little more involved now. So I wonder. Like,
I mean, last generation, you saw less of them.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
near the end of the generation, they had a resurgence, but they were better than the core controllers.
Exactly. I was just going to say, like, because I use two different third party. I use the Mad Catz Pro MLG controller, which is actually really nice.
Uh-huh. It's a really good controller.
And then for my PS3, I'm using a PowerA. I forget what it's called, but it's like their tournament controller, and it too is also very nice. So it's just like, I much prefer those over, well, I don't know, the 360 gamepad is.
What is so weird to, like, Mad Catz was a joke when I was a kid of just like, well, let's buy the Mad Catz one. That's the worst one.
Then
this last generation, they became the better one. One other thing I want to say about this entry was when I read, there's a Reddit thread for this episode, only with like four comments on it. But all of them were saying, like, This one about controllers was bullshit. The right thing to do was the host takes the bad controller and lets everybody else play on the good ones.
What?
Like,
is that Good Samaritan Gaming?
I guess it is. Well, there are some on other entries on this list. I do say, like, hey, be polite, be respectful of your guests. But on this one, I'm like, yeah, give the shittiest one to the shittiest guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty much the rule. And
or even just to younger siblings because they don't even know anybody.
Or the only guest.
Just unplugged to younger siblings is the real pro skills way to go. But time to move on.
Number 4.
Type GG after a match, even if you lose. I'd argue especially if you lose.
Yeah, this is just kind of an etiquette thing. And it's tough to do. I'm happy to announce that both Tom Agrino and I have officially quit League of Legends.
Woo! Oh, wow.
We are
how many
2 days weeks
clean?
Sober.
All right.
You got your 2 weeks chip?
Yeah, I got my 2 weeks chip, and we're both really happy about it. But I'll tell you, when you play competitive games a lot and you are losing a lot, it's tough to get yourself to type those two little letters after a match, especially when idiots on their team have been calling you names all game long and just taunting. It's just like, just fuck off, asshole. Like, you don't want to type GG. Like, that's a lot. It's almost like you're giving in. Like, admitting,
they weren't in the team spirit this whole time. Why should you be? But, I played a MOBA for the first time this week, and at the end of the match, I was like, I barely want to say good game. And some commenters also pointed out that, like, they think people only write GG now sarcastically.
Mm. A lot of times they do.
Yeah, but I feel like it's – no matter how you're writing it, you're still writing it. Like, pretty much any game that I end, any MOBA mainly, I'm going to write GG. If it's sarcastically, it doesn't matter because I also probably wrote it unsarcastically the game before. Mm. It's not like you can write, like, GG /
I guess,
sarcasm.
I guess what I was just thinking of is when Henry mentioned using it sarcastically, in my mind I was thinking, like, somebody dies in the first couple minutes of the game and people are like, oh, GG, you just fucked us all. Like, no, not really, but, you know.
And I really like that. I liked pulling up that clip of the NBA player. Just I was trying to find. I just searched like unsportsmanlike NBA game or something, and then that one came up. And the guy was just like, he gets the ball.
Well,
there's
the rule. You have to explain the rule.
All right, so it's an unspoken rule apparently in like professional sports. I think in general it's just like if your win is certain, don't hot dog it. Like, it's just rude to do so and rude to just, like, have a complete blowout of a game. So it's very near the end of the game, and I think it is a 76ers-Lakers game. And the Lakers are behind by, like, 7. They miss a three-pointer. The 76ers get it. And so the Lakers have lost. The game is over. And the thing you're supposed to do is just dribble some more and just keep the ball in play and just don't let them get it.
Yeah.
But then, so the 176er gets it, passes it to another one.
He had a breakaway.
He's like at half court and then he goes like, shit, I could get the dunk. Run, run, go, go, go. Like 360 spin super dunk. Like, and then when he lands on his feet, he goes like, oh, shit. And he just, like, looks at all the Lakers who are walking by, like, pissed off. Like, they're just going to the lockers. He's like, oh, man, guys, I'm sorry. Look, I got carried away. Really sorry, guys, really sorry.
And they're, like, not looking at him.
They're just looking away, like, man, F you. Like,
yeah.
I
don't know. That's just professional players being babies at that point. I mean, they weren't even that ahead of him. It was, like, 102 to 111.
Yeah.
It's like, who cares? Just let him dunk it.
If the guy was immediately, if he kept hot dogging the second he like landed, he was like, yeah, you see that? Then they could be that pissed off.
It was a badass dunk, though.
It was
crazy.
Good.
Well, it's easy to do a badass dunk when you're a professional player and no one's opposing you because the game is over.
They all stood back.
At that point, it was basically a slam dunk competition.
He like jumped from the free throw line, did like a 360 spin. Spun back.
The video's in the article. You should definitely watch it. And I think Henry made the joke where, or maybe it was Henry or Tom. It's like it's really funny to watch someone apologizing profusely for a slam dunk, regardless of like the consequences or like the reason he's doing it. It's just like, boom! Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like it's such a weird. You probably never thought you were going to see somebody apologize for a dunk.
Yeah, but I mean, he'd been like. if he's a professional player, then he's been playing basketball for half his life probably at that point. So it's been such an ingrained rule in him that he knows he messed up.
He knows
up.
He goofed.
Mm. Anyways, GG.
GG.
Number three.
So serene.
Take the least obvious path first. And I feel like this is a rule for pretty much any
Everything.
Single player game.
This is just modern game design now where they give you one, they give you two paths and one is clearly not the way you're supposed to go. So that's the way you have to go first.
To the point where, like, I feel a lot of times, and it's a big thing in RPGs and shooters, but there'll be times where it's like you walk into a hallway and you see a door right next to you, and then you see a door at the end of the hallway. And my 100% of the time, I will just go to the second door first because I assume either the first door is going to lead to, like, a cutscene that brings me to the next location and I will never be able to go back to that second door, or that door is going to be locked anyway, and the door far away is going to give me the key to open up the one nearby.
Now, one of the things, I mean, obviously this has been something that is extremely prevalent in RPGs especially, but one of the things I really like about Bravely Default, playing that right now, if you just wait for a second and the camera pulls way back, and then sometimes you can see like, oh, this is the path I need to take to get that chest over there.
I'm really close to beating that, by the way.
Yeah, nice. Mm. It's but I really like that. It's such a small thing, but it's like, oh, cool. Now I don't have to waste a shit ton of time like fighting monsters in random encounters trying to see if this is the path to a chest or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did like in Persona whenever I would see the stairs, I'd go like, all right, time to go in a circle then and see all the other empty rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is just a coded thing now in every game. I think there are occasionally some games that do like troll you with this and give you like a long road that then it ends up being the main objective point. And you're like, oh man, like you broke this compact. It's been a while since I heard this.
Number two on the list is no one is allowed to talk during a cutscene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just. Oh man, I wish my girlfriend would fucking.
Oh, mine too, man.
God,
every time
it's like I have to. If the game has a pause thing, I have to pause it. And the thing is too, like I'll tell her like, okay, I have to do some work right now. Which, yes, in this one specific case, means I have to play this game.
Yeah.
And then it's like people will be talking and important things will be happening. And then she'll be like, oh, hey, did I tell you about this thing that happened? And I'm just like, God, I don't want to be rude, but also I need to hear what's happening here.
The thing I always do, I always test the dashboard button, like the Xbox dashboard button or PS,
nice.
And see if that pauses the cutscenes. Because sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't, which is the worst.
Yeah, I know.
Because you don't want to like accidentally skip the cutscene because you completely miss it. But like if you just press the dashboard button, it'll just pause it right where it's at.
Mm-hmm. I hate when the dashboard button takes it as like, oh, you press start. That means stop the cutscene or skip the cutscene and just go to the next one. That I feel like I've seen that a few times.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I think even when you're just hanging out with somebody or your roommate just comes by and you're at a very important part, but they don't understand that like these scenes don't happen all the time. Like if there's an actual CG or anime cutscene, it's one of like
it's quiet time.
Yeah. It's one of an hour of them that you'll see total in this game. At best, an hour. Unless it's Metal Gear, then it's like 7
Basically
hours.
Talk away during Metal Gear. Mm-hmm. It's all disposable.
The words don't matter anyway at that point.
Right. And finally,
number one!
This kind of goes back to the multiplayer side of things. Pass the controller if you're in last place or in first for too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This one we actually had to kind of do recently, and this also can be an alternate rule to the shitty third-party controller one, where it's like we were playing a thing recently in the office of Smash Brothers, and we had one good controller, one mediocre controller, one bad controller, and one shit controller. And what we did is like the loser passes, and then I think it was like the winner passes the best controller. Like, if you win with the best controller, you have to give it to someone else.
You get the worst if you're a winner.
Yeah.
There's an order of passing around to it, and it is, and And it does bug me when I've been in places where, like, the loser just keeps going, like, oh, man, no, one more game. I can win this one. I can do it. I don't want to give it up. Like,
Well, not only when you're playing multiplayer games, but also just in single-player games in general, like, there's usually this natural breaking point where it's like, okay, now I should hand off. Because, you know, I've had friends that we were playing things like Mega Man or whatever, and we would just kind of pass off. I remember one particular instance, and I don't remember which Mega Man game it was, but I was at I had to go with my parents to some, like, open house thing, and the kids there were playing Mega Man, and my buddy and I, it was our turn, and I played and just kept playing, and then I died, and I turned to my friend, and I said, hey, you can play now. And he played for a couple minutes and just really sucked at it. And I was like, here, let me show you how to get past this. So I would, like, take it back and just keep playing. And then at the end of the day, he's like, you know, I'm really upset that you didn't let me play at all. And I felt really bad about it, but also it was just like...
I just did that to my little brother all the time because he would always spectate my my gaming. Mm-hmm. And then he'd be like, oh, I want to play. And then he would suck. Mm-hmm. And then I would just take it forever.
Well, he would just die. He'd be like, all right, here's your turn. Three deaths.
He holds that against me even to this day.
With single-player games, yeah, it's harder. It can be harder. And then some people go like, I do remember Mega Man, you'd pick a dude, you'd go to a stage, you'd die really fast, and you'd be like, I didn't even get to play. Come on. But I think Smash Brothers specifically, or especially with two-player fighting games, you just kind of got to pass it. With four-player ones, sometimes I'd have enough people over at my house we had to change the rule that was like, okay, bottom two, like, have to switch out every time.
Mm. Henry, you were quite the popular guy.
Well, we were the only I think all our games were popular. We were the spoiled kids on the street who had every system, and so they knew to come over to our place and host it. I should have at least said sometime, and I know it drove my parents crazy, having to host friends who up to about 1 a.m. would just be screaming like, ah, oh, fuck you, man! Go! screaming the worst things, and knowing my dad, too, I'm actually surprised he put up with it as much as he did. I just remember one time where he came out at 1 in the morning and was just like, God damn, don't you know what time it is? Gotta go to work tomorrow. So, we did this in the summer.
So I had a similar experience one time when I was in college, and my friends had come over, and we were all drinking and playing games in our basement, in my dad's basement. And one time we were playing Mario Kart on Wii, and my dad was asleep upstairs, and then somebody came and slapped me on the back of the head, and I was like, what the fuck? And I turned around, it was my dad and his tighty whities, and all my friends are down there too, and he's like, shut the fuck up, I'm trying to sleep. Wow. And I was just like, oh, Dad, you made this really uncomfortable for everybody, especially because you're big, really short. My dad's 5'2", so he's super short, chubby dude, and just his tidy whitey underwears.
Not even like a shirt, like
nothing. Just as
now, my dad did that same thing.
That's
too.
Awesome.
Where it's like my friends are playing a game downstairs, and my dad would show his, like, he was never like active aggressive, but his passive aggressive way of letting me know that my friend should go home was like walking down in tidy whities and eating cookies and milk, and just being like, "Yep, this is my house. You guys should probably, if you're uncomfortable, you should probably leave."
I think though, this is anyways, one time. For my 18th birthday, I had a LAN party at my house, and it was very, very fun. But one of the guys that came had been expelled from our school for selling drugs.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And
slanging? He was slanging?
Well, he had been expelled and then was back now. And so I was,
no harm, no foul.
I was telling my mom on the drive over, I was like, yeah, Brent got expelled and just recently came back for selling drugs. And my mom's like, no way, really? And because she didn't know the kid. And I was like, yeah, for real, you just ask him. So she comes down while we're all playing games. She goes, Brent, did you really get expelled for selling drugs, thinking I was kidding? And he's like, he just looks at her and his face gets all red. He's like, yes. And my mom's like, and she leaves and walks away, and he just like looks over at me, shrugs, like, ah, that was funny.
That was hilarious.
Dope. We're good.
Yeah.
So yeah, those were the, I think those were some good unspoken ones. I think there were some all right ones in the comments for it, but though maybe that should be our question of the week. What unspoken rule would you add? this.
Ooh, maybe.
I was worried. I felt I was not of this generation now, and like maybe kids today have different unspoken rules about games. Like
you kids today.
Quartering up was almost in that, but I was like, well, who goes to an arcade anymore and quarters up anything? Like,
yeah.
Maybe at like a fighting game tournament or something, like a specialty tournament, maybe, but this is not what people do anymore.
Yeah.
Same with like going to a LAN center.
Yeah, well, I think these ones pretty much still apply.
Yeah. Yeah. You chose seven good ones, Hank. Don't worry. Thank you.
I need that approval.
Yeah, and you can check out a new top seven every week on GamesRadar.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about current events. Stay tuned. Welcome back, and let's jump into the news. Henry, Nintendo is shutting down its online service on the Wii and the DS. Does this make you Henrage?
No, I was surprised it was still going anyway, like, to be honest. This isn't like... I remember with the original Xbox, like, people were definitely upset because they were still playing Halo 2 when they shut it down. But I got to think, despite how many Wiis were purchased, who was playing even Mario Kart 8 online anymore?
Like, Mario Kart Wii?
I mean Wii. Mario Kart Wii. Or Mario Kart 7, Mario Kart DS on the DS.
Like, yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, it was a nice feature, and I always liked how Nintendo kept it free back then, but their online was just so, like, nothing. Barely anybody used it anyway. Like, Nintendo needs to cut costs wherever it can at this point. So why offer online service? It does suck that you won't be able. Well, is it just I miss this. I don't know. Is it, if it's online play or even like buying things?
I know that you'll still be able to use like Netflix and stuff through it. And you'll be able to access the internet. It's just, I think they're shutting down the online servers for all of the games.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I can't imagine they'd be able to shut off buying stuff because they still are trying to get you to buy shit from your Wii U through the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
Yeah. All right, so no worries. another big story is the Xbox One's friend list and party system is supposedly being fixed with before Titanfall, and they released a video showing it off. Anyone watch the video?
No, but I did only recently figure out that I had a lot of friend requests on Xbox Live. I just didn't fucking know about because it's so confusing the way it's done right now. Because I was like, what the hell is followers? What is that even? And I went into it, and it's like all these people added me as friends. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
A follower is a friend you haven't made yet.
That's a fun way to think about it.
I just let people follow me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of followers.
Yeah.
How does that even work? Like,
it's just let them, they can't do, like, some of the friend messaging stuff, but they get to watch, like, your progress or what.
I think you get to see their news stream and, or no, they see yours, but you don't need to see theirs, I guess.
But I don't know. The Microsoft promised a lot of stuff with the Xbox One interface that just isn't there yet. And it was clunky in so many ways. And, like, it's not streamlined either. And it's so hard to just jump between stuff.
Yeah.
I heard somebody told me that when they bought it at a Microsoft store, the Microsoft store employee in San Francisco, he had a good excuse for it. He says, like, well, it's seven operating systems on top of each other. Like, it takes time to switch between the two. Like, it hasn't been worked out yet. And you just get the feeling that, like, Microsoft is, like, really launching the system with Titanfall. Like, you know?
Yeah. You're getting on Titanfall release date, you're getting Twitch streaming through the Xbox. And so this update, if you haven't watched the video, basically the friends list right now when you go to it, you're met with like the feed of what every one of your friends has done recently, even if they're offline. Even though if you're going to your friends list, I guarantee you're not trying to find out how many achievements they got yesterday afternoon in Peggle 2. You want to know who's online. So now they're going to do it. It's sort of like a Twitter app where it has like columns. that you go to, and like the first column is your active friends, who's online right now, and then you can invite them to a group from there, and the, or a party rather, and the party chat system has been redone. And it finally, I mean, I was trying to play with friends when Titanfall beta was going on, and it was so difficult to get people into a game with you, worse than it was like for the PS3.
Well, I remember pre-release, you and I tried to do a co-op match of Dead Rising 3, and we're like, what even is the fucking party system? Like, I'm in your party, but now it's saying that it's got to search for you and we make a separate party? Like,
we actually ended up just giving up eventually because it was too difficult.
So,
it's sad.
Yeah.
I hope they fix it up
in time. So, other big news story, also Xbox One related. The Xbox One has received a $50 price cut in the UK already. And current bundles are coming with a free voucher for a download for Titanfall, essentially making it a $110 price cut.
God dang.
A mere 3 months from launch. Still no price cut in the U.S. They haven't mentioned anything. So as far as I've seen, what do you think this means? And do you think that this means we're going to get a U.S. price cut very soon?
I don't know. We may get a U.S. price cut, but I think the bigger thing is just that the U.K. is a region that they're struggling a lot more into sell units than they are elsewhere. I mean, especially here. I mean, I think they're still doing all right in the U.S. I don't know if they have much incentive to chop down the price. I know, you know, people are obviously pissed. Like, yeah, that sucks that we don't get that same deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft's never had much of a market stake in the U.K. or Europe in general. Like, it is the Sony's owned that since the PlayStation era, since the first PlayStation.
Yeah.
And so I'm not totally sure on how well the 360 sold there, but definitely you got the feeling the Xbox One was like a distant second to the PS4.
Well, and it's the same thing too, right? Like when the game launched or when the console launched in the UK, it launched with FIFA. It was a pack-in and
they were pushing.
We don't have
a pack-in.
Like it's the same kind of thing, I think.
They knew they needed a FIFA pack-in.
Yeah, and I think they're really just wanting to establish a foothold in that region.
As an early as a day one adopter, like it does suck that so soon, like within 6 months of launch, they're like, have a free game with the system. Like, you expect it to at least be the first year, like the first November.
Man.
That's when they'll start packing games. And also, with how little I have played games on my Xbox One, I feel like I would have been better off waiting for Titanfall.
Well, especially that the game that you're getting for free is like their biggest
best game.
It's the one you would buy the system for anyway.
That's what I bought my system for. Which sucks.
And I also remember with just the UK price was too much. Like it was, I'm not completely clear on the price differences in America, but I do remember just what a pound is to a dollar. But I remember when they announced at E3 at the Microsoft thing, they were like, it's $4.99 in the U.S. £5.99 pounds in the UK, and that is that's a big markup. Usually, the pounds, at least number wise, if it's $3.99 here, it's £3.99 pounds, and that is what like the PS4 was not as marked up as the Xbox One was. Like the price was crazy high in Europe, and so they had to bring it down a little bit like the price cut was necessary. Like it just had a big markup for import, I guess, or something. I'm not sure. Like maybe
I remember people were just super pissed off because it was unbelievable. Like we were complaining about the price and the UK was like, oh really, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's why I mean I wasn't surprised that like, you know, a lot of our UK buddies, like some of them didn't buy the Xbox One just because. And at that price, I don't think I would have either.
No,
no way.
I mean, I think for me, console-wise, like $500 is about as much as I'm going to ever spend.
Yeah, that's the max.
And that's a rough pill to swallow.
For console
if
only?
If I wasn't in this industry.
It's part of my job, and it's just like, ooh, I don't know on this one, man.
Yeah, if it wasn't my job, no way. PS4 would have been the only one I bought.
I mean, if it came for a game, with a game for $500, it'd be an easier sell, but, you know, the Xbox One was $500 just for the console and a controller. It's just...
And then it also makes the Kinect, which I don't like using all that much. And then the Kinect has just become like an annoying, like, overly helpful child, just like, oh, you said Xbox? What's up?
Oh,
I'm like, no, shut up. I'm trying to watch this YouTube video. I just laughed loudly at it. Sorry.
It's super annoying, even like because you end I've ended up becoming reliant on that stupid thing, which ends up making me lazy, and it just makes me frustrated when I'm just like, all right, I'm done playing. Xbox, turn off. Xbox, turn off.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I don't know. Like I've actually really enjoyed using it just to turn my machine on and off.
Yeah.
That's kind of all I use voice commands though.
I use them all the time, but they don't work. They work like 80% of the time, which is up. They've improved it, but it's still like I still end up getting angry at a piece of plastic like once a day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I remember the I first understood the price difference for EU purchasers when in. A lot of people talk about the, you know, the big, we don't, you can use games all you want on the PS4 thing from E3. But Andrew House, who's British, he had a bit at the end when he was announcing the price. He was announcing the price for the PS4. And he said, like, and for my friends and for my home country, we are proud to offer it for, I think, $399. Like, I was like, wow, he's calling out just how marked up the Xbox One is. Outside of America.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That I'm hoping maybe this will help Microsoft. For Microsoft's sake, the Xbox One will sell more. But PS4 is off to a pretty good start. March will be the difference maker. Titanfall.
And I'm still continually blown away. Just like, oh, yeah, PlayStation Plus subscriber, here's a really good fucking game for nothing that you get to keep forever as long as you're subscribing.
And in 2 weeks, you get another one.
Yep.
Yep. So that's it for the big news stories. You can check out a news story every day on Games Radar. Moving on to previews. Did anyone see anything? Henry, you want to talk about Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, I'll talk about it a little, though. It is pretty much a known quantity. So they announced the Infinite Crisis is DC's DC's MOBA made by Turbine, who I think they were the guys who made the Lord of the Rings MOBA, Guardians of Middle-earth, I'm pretty sure.
No. That was made by different Turbine's Lord of the Rings Online, Dungeons and Dragons Online, Assurance Call 2.
But yeah, so I went to the DC. I went to the DC Entertainment offices in Burbank, which was pretty fun. I almost wore a Spider-Man shirt there, but I was like, "Nah, let's be professional." So I was. I just wore a nice normal T-shirt. But we went. It's a game we'd seen before, but they did announce that the open beta starts March 14th. And I played it. I have never played a MOBA before, and people have no respect for someone who is new at a game.
Noob.
They hate you, and they are.
Who'd you play as in your first game?
They farm kills off of you for noob killing. I played as GL the first time, just regular.
We're abbreviating names now.
GL, everybody.
The old GL.
Yeah, Noob Lantern.
Green Lantern, I played as him. Because he was a good ranged guy, I was like, oh, I can just stand kind of back. And I also had one of the Turbine guys who was very nice. He was coaching me throughout. He was like, okay, stand back. No, don't cross that line. His tower's killing you now. Like, oh. and he also said, stay away from Green Arrow. That guy knows what he's doing. He's just going to get, you're dead. Okay. but yeah, Green Arrow was just super weak. So then the next game, he was like, so you're going to play as this tank who's really good at assisting people and can take a lot of damage, Mecha Superman. I was like, all right. I just felt slightly ashamed. But
MOBAs are really tough to get into when you don't know what you're doing.
Man. It's annoying. I wasn't even the worst guy there. But, I mean, now I know what mid-topping and bottoming is.
Push
the bottom.
And also jungling. I know that now, too.
Jungle.
There you go. Now you're basically a pro.
Yeah.
It was funny to talk to the Turbine guys about it because it's like, oh, so here, go in this shaded area and you'll find some NPCs you can just kill for experience. I was like, I said, oh, is this that like foresting thing I heard about? and then the guy was like, well, it's traditionally called jungling, but that's not what we call it in this
foresting.
Game. Foresting. I felt like quite a dweeb. But
I feel like that was an earned, earned dweeb.
But it's a neat concept. All the different universes of characters, and they take a lot of care in the DC lore. They are recognizing, and I wish I could have played as Superman. He seemed like the coolest, but dude kept taking Superman, man. Jose from Electric Playground. He was,
motherfucking Jose.
He was just like, no, man, I'm Superman. But then he called himself General Zod.
So did he basically call the character and everyone had to acknowledge it? Because that's an unspoken rule of video games. Oh!
Oh, and the lines connect.
When he just picked it immediately. And in MOBAs, once the guy picks it, you're just...
Fucking Jose auto-locked Superman?
Yep.
That son of a bitch.
he didn't try anybody else. He was just like, no, I'm Superman. And then the guys were like...
Well, auto-locking Superman is the...
They told him, like, you could at least pick this alt costume and see what that's like. He's like, I'm not playing as Clark Kent. Come on. I'm Superman.
I just love the idea that in a MOBA, auto-locking is looked down on. And in a MOBA, auto-locking Superman, not even just the fact that he did it, but auto-locking Superman is basically like, nope, God, I'm God. You guys can't be God now. I took God.
I did. We played two games. I lost the first. Our team lost the first one. Then I won the second one, and that felt good. And
feels good, bro.
It felt good to win. It does. So I don't know. I think I will play it. The open beta starts soon. I think I will play it a little.
All right.
I'll give it a shot. But I don't like how mean people are.
Henry's going to become super addicted and won't be able to play anything else for the rest of his life.
Henry. Shoot.
You might see a feature soon-ish about just being a fanboy's first MOBA kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. So, any other previews before we jump?
I saw Murdered Soul Suspect.
Murdered Soul Suspect looks so good. Can you tell me about it? Because I saw it last year at E3, and I was super excited.
The concept is super cool. So, you're this detective named Ronan. Of all names, it's kind of weird.
He has a weird last name too.
Yeah, I forget his last name, but you start off the game. You're getting thrown out of a window, and there's just this masked guy that somehow has super strength, and he just throws you like into a street.
Ronan O'Connor. It's actually not that
he's
strange
Irish.
Last name.
And then so this mystery man comes down, and you're just like helpless on the ground, and he shoots you 7 times in the chest. So you're dead.
You're very dead.
So you wake up, and you're standing around, and you look down, and you find your body is just laying there. And there's police around, and you're trying to like phase back into your body. There's like this little mini game where you're like rotating your hands and trying to like get back into your body, and it just doesn't work because you're dead. And so the game is you're trying to figure out who killed you, and finish your unfinished business so you can join your wife in the afterlife and stuff. So
it takes place in Salem.
So it takes place in Salem, Massachusetts, which is really cool. But The way you go about solving crimes, like the first crime scene is your own crime scene. You could piece together what everybody in the crime scene knows, like the investigative police and like all the witnesses. You could
possess them. And like you can like go into a witness's mind, and the witness is like, I don't really remember it, and then you like sort their thoughts out for them, so they can articulate what they saw.
You could suggest emotions and just like listening on conversations and stuff, and it's just really interesting because you can't actually take control of anybody like you would think possession would be.
Right.
So you're just kind of piecing together information, and then you find ways to like move on in the story. But there's also like there's those main sections where you're trying to figure out like a crime scene, and then there's other parts where you could walk through anything that's not blessed by whatever holy water everybody blesses their house with in Salem, Massachusetts. But you can walk through like everything, and you'll find ghosts just chilling because they're just
stuck.
Souls everywhere. Yeah. And you could help them move on to the other side by helping them figure out their unfinished business, which is really cool. So there's one ghost that was this girl that didn't know where her body was and didn't know how she died. And it turned out that next door there was this elderly couple that hated her partying, decided to kill her with garden tools and dumped her body in a
Jesus.
In a mine or something. So
mine?
Like 10 miles down the road. So
nobody would find it.
Yeah, so you had to do this whole investigation thing and just figure out what happened to her body, and then just the thought of her knowing where her body was, she was able to move on. But so there's like cool stuff like that. It's not really action heavy, more like an LA noir kind of vibe to it.
That sounds cool. And it's next gen release now too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's next gen and last gen.
Yep. And PC.
And PC. Yeah. So, yeah, check that out. It's really cool. If you like ghost stuff and really creepy ghost stories, it's a really cool game.
Yeah. All right. And I think that's the end of previews. We can jump over to reviews, starting with Professor Layton and the Azrin Legacy.
Yeah, I'll be quick about this.
That'd be great.
it came out in November in the UK, so it's kind of old news to some of our listeners anyway. But it is the third in the prequel trilogy of Layton games. The sixth overall Layton game. And it is supposed to be the final game where you play as Professor Layton. And they haven't said it's the last one for the universe. So it is kind of just a big send-off to the series. Like, it's got a ton of callbacks. Some storylines are just to meet an old character who you haven't seen in a few games. You revisit some old areas and you go like, oh, this all fits together in one giant conspiracy,
right?
That's been building the whole time, and it's fun. It's you know, kind of like when you know something is the last film or book in a series, just to see these characters one more time, do the things they do, and be and act like the. Do the things that you like them to do. They're really interesting in that way. As for gameplay, it's just a bunch more puzzles. Like it is just a puzzle delivery system. And they're really cool puzzles. Some are. Most are. A few just made me angry. It's like, well, that's bullshit. That's a lot. Like, one of them was just like, hey, how many cups? It had this very extreme math problem about how many cups does it take to melt this thing? And you start doing math, and I forgot the rule. This was early in the game. And I forgot the rule in Layton, which is like math actually doesn't matter. If something seems to take extreme math, then it is a trick question.
Yep.
And then I realized like, oh, right. The answer is zero because there's a fire behind her and you can just melt it with the fire. But when I thought it was a real mean trick. And then also,
I'm just imagining Hen raging at Layton, just like, there's a fire in the background.
but the Layton, it is fun. If you're tired of Layton, this isn't going to like completely change the series for you or turn you onto it. And it's a series in need of something real fresh done to it, which I hope they do now that they're done with it.
But as murdered sole suspect style, mm-hmm, you're mm-hmm. dead and you're going around solving ghosts puzzles. That's Professor Layton, who has been shot 7 times in the back. Somebody please Photoshop this cover art.
Oh, and the animation is gorgeous. Like it still looks great. And there are small improvements. Like it uses the 3D better than the last 3DS one did.
That's good.
And but it also has the problem I had with the last 3DS game too, which is there's enough content with all the puzzles they give you, but then they're like, hey, here's 4 mini games. Like, don't you want to play them? Not really. Like,
I kind of just want to figure out how to build a house out of matchsticks, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I don't want to, say, do fashion designs for some of the female NPCs I meet, which is just a very strange one. Or
What weird animal do you get that is your, like, animal of the game?
A squirrel.
Okay, that seems oddly fair.
His is the best of the minigames. It's like this weird nut rolling game or something. It's
nice.
There's also a very strange scene in it where if you've not played a Layton game before, it just feels so out of place where you're in the forest and the squirrel shows up. And then Layton says to his sidekick, Luke, he says, oh, hey, you know how to talk to animals. Why don't you talk to that one? He's like, all right, hey, Mr. Squirrel. Cheat, 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 cheat. Ah, the girl went that way. Thank you, Mr. Squirrel. Like, if you didn't. It had been better established in previous games, so they just go like, oh, yeah, he talks to animals. Like, let's move on.
Which is weird because for a majority of the Layton games, they do a really good job of like, there's a giant ghost destroying everything in the city. Nah, just kidding. It's just like a fucking car with a fake ghost on it. Mm. Like, everything has a logical Scooby-Doo-like tear the mask off. It was actually the farmer. Except for the fact that Luke can speak to animals.
Yes. Magic is also a little more real in this one too.
I feel like maybe that's what they're doing with the series, where they're like, we've run out of Sherlock Holmes style stories. We should probably start adding magic.
Mm-hmm. So, but it was good. I gave it a 4 out of 5. A worthy a worthy play, especially if you're really into Layton's gameplay.
Like awesome. I reviewed Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare,
mm-hmm. Ooh.
Which was a lot better than I expected. It was a lot deeper than I expected, especially in some ways. So third-person shooter set in the Plants vs. Zombies universe made by PopCap. Not something that I think anybody expected.
No way.
Very Team Fortress in that there's different classes. The thing that makes it kind of unique is that the classes are asymmetrical, where the zombie classes and the plant classes are actually fairly different. Like, the zombies don't have a melee class, and the plants do, and the plants don't have a... or the plants have a sniper and the zombies don't, mm-hmm. but they have like a shotgun wielder and somebody who can teleport. So it kind of balances itself out. But the thing that makes it so good is that, so there are three modes. There's like a regular team deathmatch, which is just super basic team deathmatch. There's like a capture point mode that's more like Rush or like the Team Fortress modes than it is like Battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Horde mode, and the modes are all super fun, and it's just a fun, balanced game. And as you play, you unlock coins that get you booster packs.
Those are cool.
The booster packs earn you like hats and costumes for your plants. But there are like dozens of customization options for every plant. And then there's unlockable different versions of the plants you can unlock to be like, oh, now my pea shooter shoots poison.
Yeah.
So it's just a very complex game. The only issue is I don't think there are enough maps, and the gameplay depth isn't especially great.
It's $40, right?
Like, it is $40, though. Mm-hmm. So if you are like, holy shit, I can't wait for Titanfall, like, I can't wait those 2 weeks, or you're not a huge fan of the Call of Duty-style shooter, it's probably one of the better exclusives, like, console exclusives on the Xbox.
It is an Xbox One exclusive, isn't it? Yeah.
It's also on Xbox 360 and PC, but it's not coming to PS4 or PS3 yet. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that it also feels like it could easily be broken apart and piecemealed into a free-to-play game, which I'm kind of expecting. That might be what they do with the PS4 version if that ever happens.
Oh, maybe.
Well, the stuff you're talking about with the booster packs reminded me a lot of Mass Effect 3, which they definitely charged people for.
Yeah, and they don't charge people for this stuff yet. But yeah, I gave it a 7 out of 10 or a 3.5 out of 5, and definitely recommend picking it up. So what do you guys want to do next, Castlevania or Thief?
Oh, don't matter. Pick one. Oh, well, you can get Castlevania because it'll be brief.
All right.
I mean, you know, Dave reviewed it. I don't think any of us have played much of it yet, so we can't speak to it ourselves.
Oh, I thought you had played through most of it.
No, I've only played the opening hours.
Okay, well, in that case, you can just check out the review on the site.
Long story short, it tried to do too much. There's some shoehorn stealth elements that really kind of mess things up, and a lot of the gameplay mechanics just aren't coming together in this one, unfortunately.
Hold on. I figured out what we can do. Hold on. Wait. I got this. This is gonna be awesome. Ready? Ready? Mm-hmm. Here is Dave's review. Please work. Let's do this. Hold on.
Lacking the focus, clarity, and coherence of its precursor, Castlevania, Lords of Shadow 2 fails to satisfy as a sequel or as a game in its own right, delivering muddled game design and little narrative resolution.
So that's our review of Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
We do have a video review, too.
Google, or
if you want to hear Dave's voice.
If you do, the option is there. So let's move on to Thief, which I know both of you did play.
Yes. We did both play it. But I reviewed it. So Thief is it's a stealth game, and it wants to be a stealth game real hard, and it doesn't want to do anything else.
no matter how much you want it to.
Yeah, so the gameplay is really very similar to the old games. You'll skulk around in the shadows, and you got your water arrows and your choke arrows and all this awesome thief gear that will allow you to branch off into different paths and to kind of choose the way you approach like stealing a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And stealing a bunch of stuff is really like the best thing about this game.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's really a lot of fun. You could go on these side quests to help out people around the city, which is just called the city.
Yeah.
And So they'll give you missions to find the special loot, and oftentimes you'll have to like break into a safe or find different clues to unlock these kinds of things to get like these super cool masks and all these pretty neat collectibles. But it also has the main storyline, which is probably about 10, 12 hours ish.
It took me about 15 hours to finish, okay. But I did a lot of the side stuff too.
Okay, yeah. The main quest is probably about 10 hours, and it's got some of that mysticism in there. Like, there's mutants and sort of weird magic stuff that happens. And the story is kind of a wash. It doesn't really surprise you in any way. You could see the twists coming from a mile away. Yeah. And
not only that, but one of the things that like kind of really bothered me about it is like the city is, you know, there's a nasty plague going around, everyone's sick, and they keep talking about it as though it's this huge deal that's happening, but you never really see this. Like, it's all outside of your periphery.
Yeah, it's all in the messed up audio of the game. So Ryan said, there you'll walk by an NPC in the street and they'll say, oh, the gloom really sucks, but you never actually see anyone that has the gloom.
You'll see like two people sitting and like puking into their shoes.
And it's just like,
okay, I guess that's...
And it's just like, stop sitting out in the rain in the puddle right there. You probably wouldn't be barfing, but... Yeah,
it feels a lot like it's Thief... Like, it's almost like how Tomb Raider came and then Uncharted came and then Tomb Raider tried to become Uncharted. It almost feels like that in terms of tone with this and Dishonored. Because Dishonored had that great ambiance, and it had the open setting, and it had the character, like it had that disease that was rampant, and they actually did something with it.
Yeah, I think it feels a lot like Dishonored, but not as good.
Right, right. So the main thing about the game is the stealth is really good. It's a lot of fun if you love stealth games. If you're going in for a story that, you know, is going to blow you away, or the revival of Garrett being an awesome dude, you're probably going to be a little bit disappointed in that aspect. But, you know, if you want to just go around stealing stuff, which is totally awesome, Thief is a pretty good option.
All right. What score do you give it?
3.5 out of 5.
All right. There you have it. So a week of a lot of okay games.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like all of the games were like, if you want to buy something on this platform, this game will do. Except for Castlevania, which you probably shouldn't buy.
I think just straight up don't buy
it. Yeah, just don't buy it. Oh, also we reviewed Basement Crawl and gave it one of our lowest score of the year, easy, so far. Worst PS4 game released so far.
It is a poorly constructed Bomberman clone, online only, and the online portion of it just doesn't work.
Oh, wow.
So there's that. All right, we're going to take a quick break and jump back with the community segment. All right, welcome to the third and final segment of Radio Radar. Greg is busy doing another thing. I asked him what it was, and he told me to go stuff myself. That didn't actually happen.
As Greg often does.
Greg often does. And before we jump on straight into the community segment, we do have...
Oh, no.
Corrections. You screwed up.
Henry, you and I screwed up in one instance.
Oh, yeah?
Let me find...
I also screwed up. I have one as well.
Oh.
I can start mine while you guys are going. I mistakenly said in the last episode that the Arthurian stuff happened in, like, the 1400s. What I meant to say was, like, the 400s.
Oh, good.
I was off by about 1,000 years.
That's all. So Henry and I were both wrong. We called... We were talking about the Fire Princess in Adventure Time.
Yes.
And the Fire Kingdom. It's the Flame Princess and the Flame Kingdom.
Oof. Ooh.
Sorry, people.
Also, Henry specifically.
What?
Yeah, you're getting singled out. Hold on. I need to find it again.
You used the word.
Dixie Kong, not Trixie Kong.
Yes. All right. I said, I'm sorry. Look, man, I didn't play the sequels to Donkey Kong Country all that much. I barely did because Donkey Kong wasn't playable, and I thought that was bad. Like, it's his game. He should be playable in it. Don't make Diddy and Dixie or, like, Baby Kong or whatever. Don't correct me on this one. I don't care what his name is.
Also, another correction from Games Radar Colander Cooper. Henry, on the Fast Few podcast, you've said that you're recent to say... Or reticent doesn't mean reluctant. It means reluctant to speak. So it's basically like you're saying you're reluctant to speak to say, which is redundant.
All right.
Granted, you're on a podcast called Radio Radar, and the word radio, or the word radar, has the word radio in it. So we're already in a redundant.
Yeah.
Or like ATM machine.
Yeah.
Like, But yeah, all right. I'll try to be more reticent about saying that stuff.
In their face. All right, so let's move on to... It's not working. Why isn't this button working?
Here we go. Bring your
radar. Ryan Talgenic. Do the growl.
Meh.
All right, so question of the week last week was, what developer would you like at any studio to take over BioShock? Why don't you read this one, Ryan?
Super Giraffe says, Jaeger, plain and simple. Spec Ops The Line showed that they can craft a fantastic story and have it mean something just as well as Levine. Hell, Spec Ops was about a man stranded in an isolated city ruled by a man that's a reflection of the hero, and you try to make your way to a tower. Actually, that's also a 2K game. Is it too late to submit Spec Ops is a BioShock game as my answer to what is your crazy game theory? They can go Yogg Spice.
I think because the secondary thing for this episode was to give your K-pop, your pop name for the band. And Bladed Falcon also said he was going to choose Jaeger.
Interesting.
Another option we had was EAC73 says he wants BioWare to take on the next BioShock. Since they are known for their choice system, I think it could be applied to BioShock nicely. It's not like the choices you had in BioShock 2, where it was either kill this person or let them live. This would give the protagonist more dialogue, which was great and infinite, in my opinion. Also, BioWare making BioShock. It sounds like it was meant to be. Sorry, I don't have a pop star nickname, but I can give you guys some. Cooper can go as H. Koopa. Henry can go by his Twitter handle, Henergy.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G.
I call him Henergy all the time.
Tom can go by Tom Margrino. Greg can go by Podcast Buddy. And I'm sorry, I can't come up with anything good for you, Ryan.
Oh, that's okay. My parents couldn't either. They named me Ryan because they looked at whatever objects were nearby, and one of them was an image of somebody named Ryan. I made that up, and it was a bad joke.
Master of Disaster, the most sensible choice is clear. We need a Telltale BioShock game. Not only are they doing just about every other game series on the planet, but they might be one of the few that could implement some kind of choice-driven storytelling. It looks like a lot of people wanted to do choice-driven stuff in a BioShock.
Did they just not – maybe they didn't like the no choice there actually was in BioShock Infinite.
Maybe. Winner 2 says they should just give it to 2K Marin, considering BioShock 2 is the best-selling BioShock game.
Yeah. The 2K Marin barely exists anymore either. Or did they close that?
No, it's the same. From what I've heard, they – basically renamed their studio.
Oh, okay.
They renamed their studio, and everybody sort of reported on it as like, oh, they got shut down. And Genderbender 9000, I would like to see the game licensed, given to Konami, so they could give it the Silent Hill treatment and make it a dark psychological survival horror game. Konami would also be the perfect studio to be able to come up with that crazy twist ending that has become a staple of the BioShock series.
Well, the Konami that made Silent Hill, I don't think is the present Konami.
And the winner this week was Maestro Disastra. Wow, I understand now. hold on. Maestro Disasta.
Okay.
Shoot an email to GregH@GamesRadar.com and let him know that you miss his voice on the podcast and that you won a prize and you demand it be a good one.
What was his answer?
He was the one that did the Telltale. I'm choosing Greg turned us on to the read everyone's and then choose the winner so that it's not like, oh, I wonder who it was. So you get to play along.
I see.
In your head. Question of the week this week, inspired by the top seven. What was a rule in your household about an unspoken rule in your household about gaming growing up? I had one for a while because my dad was a gamer also. That any game we bought had to be a two-player game for a while because we wanted to play co-op together, which, all things considered, isn't the worst rule.
Let's see. Boy, that is tough because I used several of mine already in that. But I think it is one rule in my house was the guy who bought – like the person who bought the game is the one who gets to play it the most. Like if this happened with Ocarina of Time where – I bought Ocarina of Time, I got it as a gift, really. But it was my gift. It was my Christmas gift.
Yeah.
And so I had started it, and then my brother started a second save file on it, and I was like, you can play this, but I play this more. If I want to play it, I get to play it. This was my game.
Hank, don't share.
My unspoken rule, and this was like specific to PlayStation and PlayStation 2, was if you want to play a game on my system, that's fine, but you bring your own memory card because you're not going to fucking overwrite my save.
Hell yeah.
Again.
Did you ever have a friend overwrite your save?
Oh, yeah. I had put like 60 hours into Final Fantasy VII on my first playthrough, and it got overwritten.
I still don't talk to somebody who I went to school with because he intentionally saved over my Conker's Bad Fur Day file, Andrew Quist. Fucker.
God, I can't even think of one right now. Let's just say when I used to play Contra with my dad when I was a little kid and we played co-op or two-player. I don't think we even called it co-op back then.
Mm. Yeah, definitely two-player, not co-op.
When my dad started complaining about how his thumbs hurt, that's when I needed to stop playing.
Once dad starts complaining about his thumbs,
he'd say,
game over.
Say, my thumbs hurt. Okay, I guess we need to stop.
So that's it for the question of the week. And Radio Radar, be sure to leave your question on the podcast. You should also watch Game Bunker on YouTube.
And our YouTube channel.
And all of our other shows. Follow us on Twitter at GR Radio Radar. Like us on Facebook. Also, next week is Games Radar's best week ever, where we're going to, as you probably know, Games Radar has the best lists on the internet, giving you the information you need to help you buy new games for your current generation systems or win arguments with your friends that think a game is better than it actually is because you could say, well, Games Radar ranked it higher than blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So we're going to give a full refresh to all of those lists, make sure they're all up to date. So next week is going to be jam-packed with updates to those. There's also going to be some other stuff, but a majority of it is going to be that. We will see you in the comments. Bring your Flame War attire because despite the fact that this week is supposed to be a celebration of how video games are fantastic and we love them, I'm sure you're going to fucking hate us if we don't agree with everything you agree with. So, with that, we'll see you next week.